The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Honey, the online shopping platform that helps consumers save time and money, is building a Boulder office and looking for software engineers to join the team. Find out more at joinhoney.com/careers. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. We have a unique startup and tech community here on the edge of the Rockies, and we want you to know about it. The Boulder Tech Podcast features conversations with leaders, thinkers, and influencers, sharing their views on what's happening in Boulder's rapidly evolving tech scene. These interviews were recorded during the 9th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind, anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Episode number 15 of the Boulder Tech Podcast features Michael Green, founder of Pack and Puff. It seems only natural that a podcast about Boulder will, at some point, look at the marijuana biz. And in our discussion, Michael relates his success story in and shares some of his views on the cannabis sector. We also touch on his work with blockchain, as well as his impressions after his first year of living in Boulder. What is Pack and Puff?
Pack and Puff is a product that I invented for stuffing joints, believe it or not. And I sell it on Amazon.
And is it like a stash box or?
So now, I guess in the cannabis scene, you know, back in the day, people would roll their joints by hand. You get some smoking paper, you put your plants material in there and you roll it up by hand. And now those smoking papers come pre-rolled around like a little filter tip, so you can just put your plant material in it. And so basically it's like a funnel and it's clear and has measuring lines on it, so you can make the perfect size for your needs. So you don't have to deal with like a half burnt joint and walking around with that in your pocket smelling like an ashtray, and it's not pleasant to relight. And also the idea behind it is like conscious consumption and measure what matters, basically.
Interesting. So it's not a stash thing. It's an actual marijuana intake product.
I guess, yeah. Technically, it's for tobacco.
Of course, yeah.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like a joint production tool.
Right.
It started, I was working at a dispensary in 2015, and they wanted to sell these smaller joints. They were selling really big joints, and that's a pretty poor user experience for someone who's not, you know, a massive consumer. And so they were making them in a very inefficient manner. And so that's where the idea came from, basically.
And how long have you been doing this?
So I guess the company technically started in 2016, but I guess the idea was in March of 2015.
And how's it going?
It's going well. I've pivoted the business strategy. Originally, I was trying to sell the tool to dispensaries for them to produce these small joints and then sell them to their customers. But, you know, in this industry, there's so many regulations and they have to deal with all of these changes that are imposed by them by the state. And so they don't really see the user experience of a 1 gram joint as broken. And so it's not something they're really eager to fix, like to change things up to do that. Then moved towards wholesaling them to smoke shops and dispensaries, but that was a lot of time like me driving around and like trying to pitch this product to people. So in July of 2017, I put it on Amazon. It was pretty much like, I'm not sure that this is going to continue to be a business, basically. And I put it on Amazon, and that's been pretty life-changing, honestly. So
how so?
Sales have increased dramatically. Yeah. So it's basically, it's direct to consumer now. And so the amount that I sold on Amazon in the first 2 months, I guess my revenue was more than the past 2 years of doing it, essentially. So it's been very productive.
Have you thought about going back to the shops and pointing to the Amazon and saying, you guys are missing out?
I have a lot of room for growth and optimization. So for instance, I was telling you about those pre-rolled cones, and I'm buying those from a company. So now I'm going to move towards manufacturing my own and moving towards injection molding of the product. Actually, the company that I get the pre-rolled cones from reached out to me to get a sample of the product because they're also a distribution company. So there's a possibility that I may work with them for distribution, but right now I'm 3D printing it. And so that is not really a scalable production method.
Were you in the cannabis sector before Pack and Puff?
When I moved to Colorado from North Dakota in 2011, I moved to Breckenridge as a snowboard instructor and found out that working for a large mega corporation is not my favorite thing in the world. And so I got a job at a dispensary as a trimmer in like November of 2011. And I worked there until basically the beginning of 2016. So yeah, I was in the industry for like 4 years, and I saw them through the transition from medical to recreational. It was really interesting because like we lived in this mountain town up in Silverthorne, where it's about like Keystone, Breckenridge, Copper, all of these ski areas where there are all of these tourists. And it went from like the ultimate no tourist job, like you had to have a Colorado medical marijuana card. Overnight, all of a sudden, anyone that's over 21 can come. So it was like no tourists to like all tourists. Like the amount of people that we saw, it was like a 4 times increase. So it was really crazy. And then dealing with these regulations from the state that they push, like overnight, you're expected to comply with all of these regulations. So it was a crazy time for sure.
And how has the business evolved? Where do you see it now compared to where it's been and where it's headed?
Yeah, I'm honestly like a little bitter on the cannabis industry, like just because I did a lot of the compliance and things and like dealing with all of that stuff. It was just really annoying for me because like in that industry, you move at the speed of regulations. And now, so like I'm really focusing more on the blockchain industry, which is kind of like you move ahead of regulations and the regulations kind of come behind you depending on what you're working on. And so yeah, I've been kind of disconnected from the cannabis industry because it's just like, it's just frustrating for me to even like think about all of the regulations that are required and like how unsustainably things are being run right now. Like, oh, you need all of this childproof resistant plastic packaging and we're going to grow these plants over under 1,000 watt light bulbs. And it's just like, you know, it's kind of in a weird space right now because it's moving from this underground basement industry into like this actual, you know, legitimate industry. And so it's just transforming a lot really quickly. But I guess there's still just massive growth. This company that I'm buying these pre-rolled cones from, I placed an order for some product from them like a month ago. And then when that guy called me on the phone to get a sample of my product, I was talking to him like, so when can I expect to get this? He's like, yeah, we have 4,000 units backordered behind you and like all of our SKUs are popular, so we don't really know how to scale it very well. And so for me, I was like, well, obviously I'm going to do something else and manufacture my own because like that's not going to work for me. And then it's just also beneficial on many levels. But yeah, it's just growing really quick. And I think a lot of it has to do with California coming online. That's like the largest economy in the United States by far. And so I'm noticing some changes there. But yeah, in general, a little disconnected at this point.
So now you're focusing more on blockchain.
Yeah.
And how does that, how are you relating that to your other business?
So like the reason that I pursued this opportunity of Pack and Puff is because in these smaller joints, and I kind of alluded to a little bit with the unsustainability. So like for me, it's really important to use my time to make an impact, to try to make things better. And my thinking before I came to Boulder Startup Week in 2016, which was really like, honestly, a life-changing experience, like learning about tech and starting to think about that more and like all of the ways it affects people's lives and how efficiently it can spread. Like if I have a physical product, like I have to mail it to you. And also like you have to be a cannabis consumer. And with technology, you can be anyone and it can affect you. And so I pursued Pack and Puff because, you know, these plants are being grown under artificial light and it's using tons of energy. And so as a product of that, it's really resource intensive. And so if you're using all of this electricity to grow these plants and then you're selling these joints that are gram and people are wasting half of it, that's like a lot of unnecessary pollution and emission that's happening. And so the idea was, if you are making a joint that's the right size for you, you aren't wasting any of that plant material. And so I thought, okay, that's good. Like I'm making a positive impact. But then like once I came here and started thinking about technology and like how I could be sitting next to an 80-year-old grandma and she could be on Facebook on her phone, like you can reach a lot of people with technology and you can you can affect things at a foundational level, whereas something like, you know, the pack and puff, that's more of like the topical level, you know. And so for like a fundamental change inside of the cannabis industry, it would be like, okay, let's use sustainable packaging and let's grow under light bulbs. But there's a lot of economic forces that prevent that from happening. But where something with blockchain that has the possibility, and in my opinion, the probability to touch and affect so many things and really kind of make society more equitable and flat and more even distribution of resources, it's just clearly, in my opinion, it's going to be far more impactful.
So we're still obviously early days in the blockchain evolution.
Yeah, very.
What's the tipping point for when it becomes widely adopted?
Yeah, I was talking to someone about this the other night, and there's a couple of different ways to look at that. So a lot of people, when they think of blockchain, they may not even have heard of blockchain and more have just heard of like crypto and Bitcoin. And so if you were asking about that, I would say the thing that will cause mass adoption of cryptocurrency is the collapse of the financial system, which I think a lot of people believe is something that is overdue. And so when that happens, I think that it's obviously going to be really crazy times. And, you know, there's this system that's been established for Bitcoin's been around for over 9 years. And, you know, there's no central authority who's issuing it. Like, we don't know when the Fed is printing money, like, and we have no control over that. It's completely opaque. But something like this is completely open. You can see what's happening. It's trustable. So that's what I would say would cause the mass adoption of cryptocurrencies. But like, for all of the use cases of this technology, I think it's going to be kind of like a slow thing. And I think that because it's not user friendly right now, and I think that's a good thing, because these blockchain protocols aren't really out of place, they aren't user friendly. And that's good because they aren't scalable right now. So like, for instance, the Ethereum network processes like 15 transactions per second. The Visa network, on the other hand, can process up to like 50,000 transactions per second. And so they just aren't really scaled yet, but there's a lot of work going into scaling solutions. So I think that it's going to be a slow scaling process. And so I think that there will be things where it will start being integrated in the back end, like something like land registration or, you know, a title to a vehicle or any of these things where it's using like not even a database, but like a ledger of who has what. I think that that will be some of the first use cases that we'll start seeing adoption in.
Here's a potentially amateur question. So it sounds like what you're saying is that there's the potential for blockchain adoption and spreading before we even get to the point where the whole financial system has to collapse and everyone's into Bitcoin. Do blockchain and just regular green dollars, do those mix?
I mean, so the federal government could issue currency on the blockchain, but like, I'm not sure exactly how that would work. So like, the idea behind blockchain, like I guess the Bitcoin blockchain, which was the first blockchain, is that anyone can set up a node on this network, and these nodes are decentralized throughout the entire world. So it's like, there's no one entity controlling it. And so if the government were to set something up like that, they would have to set it up in a way, if they wanted it to be equivalent to something like that, where anyone could run a node. But it doesn't seem like that's something that would be likely. It would probably be like a private blockchain, they call it, or a permission blockchain, where there is some sort of trust model built into that. And ultimately, from what I know, which is very little, they would essentially control all those nodes. So it's just like, there may be ways to see whether or not they've gone back and changed things, but the benefit of having like this open thing that anyone, it's permissionless, like anyone can join it, is that it's immutable, like it can't be changed. And so if the government issued something like that, it would have to be issued in a way that was open for it to survive, in my opinion. Because like, we've seen that with the internet, like when it first started, like GE had their own network that people would get on to. Sears had their own network. And like, the one that most people know is America Online, right? Like, you get the 100 CDs in the mail a year to check out America Online. And in America Online, you could click on like the sports tab or like the entertainment ad or like the classifieds. link, excuse me, not ad. And then that would take you to things within their own network. And then eventually there was a new tab for internet. And so like that was the open internet. And like no one's using America Online's private network anymore because the open internet is permissionless. And ultimately open wins out is the concept behind it, which Stan James from Origin Protocol, really, he has a great presentation on that. So that's just mind like eye opening to see that and think about it that way.
What's your tech background?
My tech background is just pretty much non-existent. I got a degree in chemical engineering, so I have like that left brain engineering mind. And like when I was working at the dispensary, I set up a lot of their network and the point of sale system, which was also a grow tracking system, you know, and that was obviously all digital. And so I'm very comfortable with computers and things like that. But in terms of like, if you want me to make you a web app or something, like that's not going to happen. But I like to try to understand as much as possible of what is going on. I'm not sure if I'll ever get into that place where I'll be coding. But you just, I think understanding like the limitations and what's going on underneath is pretty important. And so that's kind of what I try to focus on.
Would you say that there is a defining characteristic or set of characteristics that applies uniquely to the Boulder startup community?
Yeah, a lot of really awesome, really smart people who are doing things. And like that for me is one of the best things about moving here. Like there's so many great things about Boulder. Like it's absolutely beautiful. The weather is amazing. I can bike anywhere and do bike everywhere. But like really the differentiating factor is the community, right? Like I've lived here for under a year and I feel more at home and welcomed here than I have ever been anywhere else. And that includes Fargo, North Dakota, where I lived for 18 years. And so it's just really friendly, welcoming, and generally great people who are on the same level. Like you don't have to explain yourself to someone when you're talking about something, because everyone is really open and just really like give first mentality is like one of the things that I really like most about it is everyone wants to help everyone out. And it's, yeah, I love the Boulder bubble. It's a, really enjoy being here.
Anything else you'd like to add about anything?
Yeah, I have so much gratitude and appreciation for the people that have established this community. You know, I know that it takes a lot of work. And I know, like, for instance, Andrew starting Boulder Startup Week, I think that has really established this idea. And yeah, I'm really grateful to Andrew. And it's really interesting, like one of the panels that we did really is a presentation, but it was called The Future of Work in a Blockchain World. And Kevin Owaki was on that. And Stan James, who I mentioned previously, is working on a project with Andrew Hyde. And so for me, that was really cool because Andrew was talking about how when he moved to Boulder, he got a meeting with Stan James. And that was like a really big deal back then. And Kevin was kind of, Andrew took Kevin under his wing for Startup Week. And that's like how Kevin got involved into Startup Week. And now like Kevin brought me into Startup Week. And so it was just really cool to like see that lineage of all of the things that were responsible. And, you know, that's just like some of the things, but so many things working together that allowed me to be integrated into this community so wholly. And yeah, I really appreciate it. And I really feel so privileged to live here. And this is amazing to me. It's just like the best place in the world, I think.
Do you have any advice for someone who's thinking about making the move to Boulder, but isn't sure? How do I break into the community? How do I fit in there? What would you say to a person having those thoughts?
I would say, like, for me, the thing that got me so integrated in the community is I just found this niche of this blockchain community. You know, there were meetups that were happening. There's one meetup a week, and I would just go to every single meetup and just try and help out as much as possible and really get to know people. And, you know, I didn't do it with the goal of, oh, hey, like, let me get involved as possible so I can start helping out and like have this on my resume. It's just like, how can I help? Like give first. And so if you're coming out here, I think that kind of trying to find something that you're interested in and just pursuing it as much as possible and getting to know the people who are in that field. And, you know, everyone here is so generous that, like, even cold outreach, like, people will reply to you and have coffee with you. And so, yeah, I would say don't be intimidated, because the people here are really kind and generous and want to help people out and have people have the same experiences that they've had. And, you know, the love for this community, I think, is just really overwhelming.
Michael Green, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That was Michael Green, founder of Pack and Puff. Learn more at packandpuff.com. Episode number 15 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week Internet of Things track sponsor, UpRamp. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Matter, Zayo, Google, and Boulder Engineering Studio. We're also presented by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio, and to KGNU Community Radio for the recording gear. Our intro music is by Echodeck, that's E-C-C-O-D-E-K. Hear more at echodeck.com. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@thevibrarian.co. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.